Welcome to Solutions OP Clinical Trials Podcast. My name is Olga and I'm the Managing Director of Solutions OP. We are a small team of experienced professionals working on clinical trials in the United Kingdom. I'll use our podcast to discuss hot topics in clinical trials and provide analysis of the latest trends and challenges in pharma and medical device industries, not just in the UK, but globally. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to today's episode of the podcast. Today we're going to discuss dialysis solutions with a company based in Italy. But before I go into this one, I would like to just say a few words why I decided to start inviting small companies and startups and discuss with them their work. So we all know what the big companies think. We all know what Roche thinks and Pfizer and everyone else. But when it comes to the smaller companies, we don't really know what kind of problems they have, simply because their voices are not heard. And I think we need to give a lot more opportunities to them to tell us about their problems and what they're developing. Because at the end of the day, all big companies were once small companies. And they grew. So we need to allow small companies who have new innovative products to reach the market and grow. And I think this is a very positive business attitude. So I'd like to welcome today my guest, who is the clinical operations manager, Tommaso Prosocimi, at Iperbureo Pharma. So as I mentioned at the beginning, Iperbureo Pharma is an Italian company which develops products for patients who are on dialysis. And today we'll learn from him a bit more about what they're doing, why their work is important, and also about the challenges they face. And I think finishing on a positive note, we can have some recommendations what we would like to see the regulators change, something that could help companies like Iperbureo develop their products and reach patients quicker. So thank you, Tommaso, for joining me today. And I'll start with my very first question, just to ask you to please tell me a little bit more about your company and what you're currently working on.
Okay. So Olga, first of all, thanks for having me. So what is Iperbureo Pharma? So we are actually not a traditional pharmaceutical company where, you know, products are conceived, developed, produced and marketed. We are actually a super small team focused on R&D only. You can think basically Iperbureo Pharma is a scientific direction of a pharmaceutical company, a very little one, of course, without the rest. And our business model foresee to bring projects onwards as much as possible and reach a point where someone decide to invest in the idea we are developing. So far, we were successful in bringing our main project to a phase 3 clinical trial. It's called Elixir. And attract the collaboration of an international company, an Italian-based one, very famous, which is focused on home care service. They are called Vivisol. And with them, we are now developing a full therapeutic platform to innovate peritoneal dialysis, both in terms of medicinal products and medical devices. Here, the main idea is to overcome the main problems associated with marketed fluids, which is glucose-driven local and systemic toxicity. Without diving too much into the technical details, what happens locally on the peritoneal membrane is that glucose triggers some cellular processes that build up fibrosis and make the membrane not more able to act as an osmotic filter, sustaining the dialysis process. And ultimately leading to a technique failure, so the inability to keep going with peritoneal dialysis. While on a systemic level, you should just think that we use a huge loads of glucose that gets absorbed in the peritoneum in a pathology and stage kidney disease where up to 40% of patients are diabetics. And where we know that cardiovascular complications, which of course are worsened by a bad glycemic control, can significantly lower life expectancy. So what we do, basically we call our approach the osmometabolic one, as we want to substitute glucose with agents that are able to deliver a favorable effects other than only an osmotic capacity for dialysis. And at the moment, we have plenty of encouraging preclinical data, of course, some very interesting one to come soon in publication, a phase two terminated with 12 patients treated, and Elixir ongoing. Elixir, let's say, have, if I remember, around 70 patients recruited so far, and we aim to recruit 170 to terminate the study. Of course, this is the main one, but we have also other projects. For instance, one that I really love is that we think that peritoneal dialysis delivered with our approach, of course, may also be suitable for other pathologies that share fluid retention as a problem, and for which peritoneal dialysis is not indicated at the moment. Above all, super interesting is refractory congestive heart failure, which is basically a condition of terminal heart failure where your heart does not work properly anymore, kidneys are not perfused enough, and they lose performance, and a vicious cycle builds up called cardiorenal syndrome. Basically, patients get severely congested, they can develop resistance to diuretics, and when this happens, they approach the end of life. So treating them with peritoneal dialysis is a way where their kidneys disposing fluids, hopefully regaining some function and restoring some sensitivity to diuretics as well. Of course, considering that we cannot cure them. The main goal here is to improve their quality of life, which, believe me, is very miserable in those conditions. Where they are super congested, they can't even breathe. They feel like they're drowning. It's terrible. Methodologically speaking, it's a very interesting project because here we are actually testing two interventions at the same time. Peritoneal ultrafiltration for heart failure and Polycor, our investigational medicinal product, as a peritoneal ultrafiltration solution to deliver ultrafiltration and overcome those issues that are, as we were mentioned before, associated with currently marketed products, and that contributes to preventing peritoneal dialysis to be applied to this pathology, because of course you cardiovascular, you do not want to treat with huge load of glucose a severely cardiovascular compromised patient. This is a phase two study. It's currently recruiting, but to be honest, in this moment we are working on a crucial amendment because we need to simplify the protocol and boost recruitments, and also as you imagine, we are looking for potential investors to join us in the project, because you know the studies is insanely expensive, and we cannot do a whole clinical development on our own, so we are still looking for someone interested in joining us. Then we have some other secondary project. Let's say we have a super early drug discovery project that is focused on fibrosis related pathologies. We submitted a patent in late 2024. We have super interesting unpublished data on the potentiation of an enzyme activity that seems to be able to prevent or revert those cellular processes that are associated with fibrosis development. Of course, even in this case, everything started from peritoneal dialysis, where you have peritoneal fibrosis to counteract. And it's there where during our preclinical development that we discovered this enzyme as a potential target for these pathologies. We are going on, but also here we are waiting for some funds. We submitted a couple of months ago a Pathfinder program to the European Union. Then we are other two, and then I stop bothering you with our stuff. We are involved as partners in our new company that is going to be founded soon in collaboration with an institution in Milan, an important one. And here we should be focused on organ preservation and acute kidney injury prevention. And still, we are starting to exploit some experience we have to also help in this moment autonomous investigators that want to deliver to do some clinical research, and why not potentially in future also companies.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much, Tommaso. It's actually so interesting, you know, to see such a small company which does so much. If you think about it, you know, big corporations, they have massive amount of stuff. And when you're a small company with several people, it's extremely hard, you know, and it's a lot of hard work, and it's really hard work for these companies like and people like you to be able to do that. So my next question is, I came across a couple of months ago, there was a notification that FDA announced some shortages of dialysis solutions. So I was thinking, how important is to have new dialysis and more dialysis options for patients? And is there any global shortage, anything that you would like to share in that area? Thank you.
So I'm not aware of any current shortage, but I know there were one in the United States from due to a problem on a plant of a very important companies manufacturing and delivering peritoneal dialysis fluids. You should consider that companies that delivers this kind of medicinal products are super limited, and this is the problem. So just think that in Western countries, we basically have two of them and nothing more. And I guess this has also impacted the propensity for innovation in the field that has been really poor. Just consider that nephrologists basically have been using the same medicinal products, and I mean dialytics for PD, for 20 years. The last revolution in our field was the introduction of icodextrin as an osmotic agent, a colloidal one, which was approved by FDA in 2002, so more than 20 years ago. So, of course, it's extremely important to provide patients with as many renal replacement therapy as possible and let them decide with their physician, of course, which is the best therapy for their specific case. ED, peritoneal dialysis, is one of the options that, however, historically, has been considered, it's not really true now, but historically has been considered as a second grade choice. And there are many, many reasons. Okay, for instance, in early decades of dialysis, peritonitis rates were extremely high and could be life-threatening. So access to sterile supplies and good technique was limited and so on. So hemodialysis at those times seemed safer. Then hemodialysis allows a rapid removal of fluids and solutes over a few hours, while PD relies on a slower and continuous exchange. We can be less precise and unstable, but actually we know now that this is actually an advantage because you preserve kidney function and you slowly dialyze the patient. It's more biocompatible. Then also, nephrologists and dialysis nurses historically were better trained and equipped to deliver hemodialysis. Hospitals had more HD infrastructures, and this led basically to a sort of center-based culture favoring hemodialysis rather than peritoneal dialysis. Then you have other historical issues now, like peritoneal membrane tends to lose its transportation properties over time, and this is exactly because of glucose, and this is exactly what we are trying to address with our product. And there are other reasons, but the news is that this is not true anymore. So it's getting more and more evident that peritoneal dialysis carries significant advantages over HD. So first of all, it's a non-based therapy, which provides the possibility for a more independent life to patients, in particular if the patient does not live close to a dialysis unit, which is pretty an important problem. It allows for a better preservation of residual kidney function, as I was mentioning before, which we know is a very key important factor for long-term outcomes. It is more cost-efficient, a lot more cost-efficient, and it allows a way better individualization of the therapy. So keeping in mind this, we are going most probably to increase peritoneal dialysis incidence over the next year. And for this reason, we have to elevate the standards and provide better medicines and medical devices as well. One of the challenges is glucose, and this is where we are trying to do our job.
That's brilliant. So basically, if you have so few companies actually working in that field, it's really risky potentially for the patients, because if for whatever reason someone is not able to manufacture something, that could potentially lead to drug shortages, and this could be really critical for patients.
It's risky for the patient, but also for the science, because few companies doing the same stuff is not really pushing research forward.
Yeah,
competition is pretty important for this. If you don't have competition, you don't have the momentum you need for research.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you on this one. That's really a brilliant point. And I'll go to our very last question, which is actually quite a big one, as you know. My very last question is about the challenges that you face as a company developing dialysis products for patients, and also what is on your wish list, what you would like the regulators to change that could potentially help companies like yours.
So first of all, let me say that I really hope to not banalize this topic too much, because I might be a little bit too young and not so expert to see what really are the real issues in our system. But I think that our regulatory framework has become insanely complex. And with complexity come costs, and costs are not affordable by everyone, especially small companies. So I have some, examples for you where I really struggle to push my project forward. So first of all, a very interesting one. You know, we distribute our investigational medicinal products directly to patients home. However, the regulation obliges me to include on the labeling the so-called variable information. You know, they are like site code, patient code, and so investigator's name, and so on. However, if I do something on the packaging, such as writing labels, I have to do it in a GMP environment, a GMP facility, and release the product afterwards. So basically, the regulatory framework is forcing me to hire many GMP facilities for international studies and releasing the product every time I make a shipment for a different patient, every single time. Now imagine our case in which we have 85 patients, which is actually not a huge number for clinical trials, that must be supplied monthly for 6 months. It means we have to process and release in a GMP facility 510 blocks of EMP. This has a huge cost. I can say that it's around, maybe could be around $500,000, just to write something on a label. Patients are not more protected. The quality of EMP does not change. It's just very, very expensive bureaucracy. So these, where we could just release the product once, after the production, of course, and just doing labeling stuff in a non-GMP unit, in a very normal depot. Such as, and this is incredible, already hospital pharmacies do. Because hospital pharmacies are not GMP units. So this is already being done at hospital, but you cannot do it as a private company. And this is generating a mess. So this is my first example, which I think is completely crazy.
I agree.
Okay, that's very, very incredible. If I think the amount of money we are using just for this is completely crazy. We could have done another study just with the money we are losing for distribution. Another example is the number of authorities and ethic committees that have to approve a study. So things are getting better with regulation 2014, the European one. And finally, at least we have a single ethic approval in Italy. Consider that until a couple of years ago, we have basically as many as many ethics committees as many hospitals you were including in the study. But this is not enough, because for interventional clinical trial at the moment, which is managed by CTIS, we have to seek approval from the reference member states, so a part one from their competent authority and a part two for their ethics committee, plus another ethics committee for each country that is included, plus a revision of every competent authority of part uno for any country included. So what's the point here, I think? Are we saying that the study may be ethical in one European country and not in another? Because I don't think so. Or are we saying that we trust a reference member state to evaluate part one, but not completely, so we want other competent authorities to acknowledge the decision? Why? So, of course, this, in my very humble opinion, generate complexity and cost. And again, the very big problem is that costs are not for everyone. Then we have another very classical thing, because it's GDPR, General Protection, General Data Protection Law. So I think we may really open an infinite debate on this topic, but I guess most people working in clinical research notice how GDPR is insane where applied to a word. Just an example, everyone knows that a sponsor basically can use patients' data, and I mean anonymized clinical data, not identifiable data, for the purpose of a certain study only. But why? So just think how many additional researches we could do if data could be processed in other ways. Because once I collected them, it would be reasonable to use them as much as possible. For instance, someone generating data may share them with, for the purpose of other studies, to other companies, to other research institutions, with the first aim of delivering benefit to research and ultimately the society. But you cannot do this. And on this matter, I also think there is much heterogeneity in Europe in the evaluation of studies. So, in past, it happened to me that an ethics committee invalidated the approval of another ethics committee on a collection of samples for future studies. And what is really interesting is that they didn't provide a formal justification. They just said, this ethics committee, and I'm basically citing what they said, this ethics committee does not approve this approach. Nothing else. An approach that was previously approved by another ethics committee. So again, we need more clarity on what we can do, and we should be more flexible using data for the sake of research. Then you have, negotiation with hospitals. This is very well known. So this is so insane that multinational crows have entire departments focus on these efforts. I ask myself plenty of time, but I guess everyone works in this field did at least one. Why we have to deal separately with any hospital, even when they are public? Why we have to negotiate the price with anyone? Why we can't have a sort of algorithm to define the patient fee and study specific clauses once for a study? This is another process that it's taking many, many hours of work, much money spent, much time lost, when everything may be efficiently managed by a single, website, generating patient fees and negotiating a single contract at least a national level. I know that in UK it's slightly better than in other countries in Europe, but my experience with UK is that at the end of the day you still have to negotiate the contract with the specific hospital administration. So you solve this problem partially.
Well, and that's a very good point. But the problem with negotiating with different hospitals in the UK is because they have extremely bureaucratic internal procedures. So yeah. Just to get a study set up, they need to get approval from this department and that department, and everything takes a long time. Even for a simple observational study, sometimes they need to go through some committees and stuff where you think, well, it's just an observational study. Why do you need this? So I think it's internal created bureaucracy. Otherwise, the mechanism is very much what you described in the UK. We have a standardized cost. We have standardized contract. But on the hospital level, this is where things slow down. And and become very long and tedious.
Maybe not in all cases, but I guess in many cases you are basically working more, spending more, but you're not really adding a value to the project because that's for the bureaucracy.
Definitely not. No, and I completely agree with you. I think that the requirement to require a facility to do a labeling, something which is not really, it's like a very simple label to put. I think this is really overdone it. I don't know who came up with this thing, but they've definitely overdone it. And the problem is, I think many regulators, because their feedback is mainly from bigger companies, they don't really understand that this is a massive cost for a smaller company and it could prevent them from running more studies and developing new products simply because they're paying for labels.
But you know, the most exciting, the most interesting example I have for you has an happy ending. So as I mentioned before, we have this study where we deliver the IMP directed patient song, which, you know, is Elixir. And it was actually set up as a study before, under Directive 2001, which is the European directive before the 2014 regulation, and before the guidelines for decentralized trials were published. So considering that in Italy we have a law forcing investigational medicinal products to be delivered directly at hospital pharmacy only. So it presented to us the problem on how to deliver tons of liters of dialysis fluid to hospital pharmacists that are not used to this. Indeed, you know, peritoneal dialysis fluids are normally supplied directly at patient domicile in the clinical practice. Consider that a CAPD patient, so a patient treated with a manual version of peritoneal dialysis with a full dose, uses 8 liters of product per day. A patient in APD, which is the automated version, may reach 15 liters per day. So this is impossible, you know. However, at the time, I was managing the study. I was working for the CRO. And we did not know how to overcome this problem. So I decided to start discussing it with those direct interested, which are hospital pharmacists. And believe me, it was insane. I had several surreal conversations where these people agreed with me that it was not possible to deliver these kind of products directly to them. At the same time, they were specifying that even if it was possible, they cannot organize shipment to patients. And also, they clarified me that they were not in the position, and they were right, to authorize us to do anything other than giving them the product, which is not possible. So basically, we found ourselves in a point where the study was not feasible. Not for the design of the study, just for logistic stuff. You know, it's funny things, but among these conversations, I also have a discussion with an administrative person in a certain hospital where they suggested the PI to personally deliver with his own car fluids to patients. So it's wonderful. So at the end of the day, we took the only way out we saw. So we asked the competent authority. And eventually, we were authorized to bypass hospital pharmacists based on many quality standards to be respected, of course, such as having a dedicated portal accessible by pharmacists for product management and GDPR constraints and blah, blah, blah. And we developed the system with our provider specifically for Elixir. It was a nice journey. And everything took place before the publication, again, of the centralization guidelines. So I like to think we were one of the first small companies trying to do something similar with a research framework that was clearly against us. So my final point is that the research is universally considered a good thing. I think everyone can agree with this. If the clinical research framework works properly, you attract investments. Your patients have anticipated access to new therapies, and hopefully products are also marketed firstly where they were developed, such that also other patients have access, anticipated access to the therapy. also, you know, for-profit research is well paid. And healthcare system can spare money. Just think to all those comparators and the MP source and provided for free, as well as all those visits and examination paid within patient fees. So this is a clearly a win-win situation for companies and institutions that must be pursued as much as possible. On the contrary, if the research framework is too complex, is too bureaucratic, too expensive, too slow, you are losing the opportunity, and this goes to the advantage of other countries where maybe regulatory frameworks are easier to handle. That said, I really think we have to make research doable in the easiest way possible, and it must be affordable. Of course, we have to, you know, prioritize patients' rights and safety, but I really don't think this comes with bureaucracy. That's the main point.
And I completely agree with you, and it's quite fascinating to learn about these completely unnecessary challenges that companies like yours, where you're developing new dialysis solutions, are facing because of logistical issues or some contradictions in the law, or because you're required to do GMP to have GMP facility for labeling for something that pharmacy could normally do themselves. So it's really crazy situation. But that explains why not many companies are doing that kind of work. If we create challenge on every step for them, and if we make it extremely expensive, obviously they cannot afford it. And that's why they don't develop new products. And then at some point we start sit and think, well, what happened? Why we don't have any more dialysis solutions? Why is no one working in this field? And I think now we have a very clear answer to this question. Thank you so much, Tommaso, for joining
me
today.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thank you so much. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Hopefully we'll have another interesting topic like this one in the next episode. Thank you.